ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वा
So reading today from the fifth canto, chapter 24, chapter entitled The Subterranean Heavenly Planets, text number 21. Text is a prose, so we'll read the translation and the purport. Translation: The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as the Super Soul, sells himself to his devotees such as Narad Muni. In other words, the Lord gives pure love to such devotees and gives himself to those who love him purely. Great self-realized mystic yogis such as the four Kumaras also derive great transcendental bliss from realizing the Super Soul within themselves. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The Lord became Bali Maharaj's doorkeeper not because of his giving everything to the Lord, but because of his exalted position as a lover of the Lord. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. So we are continuing to narrate this pastimes from the 24th chapter, the 5th canto. And this particular verse, we can see how all the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam is condensed in this particular verse. What is it that the Lord is expecting from His devotees? And what is it that the Lord gives to His devotees? So in this particular verse, we see how great exalted devotees like Narad Muni or the four Kumaras are so exalted that the Lord completely gives Himself to them. And they in turn are completely surrendered to the Lord. And the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, that the reason for the Lord becoming the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj in the Sutala planet is not because he has given up everything for the Lord, but because he is a real lover of the Lord. So we see from this particular pastime of Bali Maharaj, when Vamandev approached Bali Maharaj to demand from him 3 steps, Shukracharya, the guru of Bali Maharaj, warned Bali Maharaj not to listen to Vamandev. And he gave him various reasons, telling him that in spite of you having given this commitment, it is still not too late for you to revoke it. Because if the property of a person is in great danger, then he is in that situation, he can go back on his words. So Shukracharya was very emphatic that Bali Maharaj should not be listening to the words of Vamandev. But Bali Maharaj had made up his mind. And he turned towards Shukracharya and said that, in spite of whatever you are saying, I have given my words to this young dwarf, so it is my duty to fulfill it. And at that point of time, Shukracharya was so angry that he cursed him and told him that because you are not listening to your spiritual master, you shall lose everything. Whatever material possessions you have, you shall lose it. And because Bali Maharaj was convinced that ultimately his real position lay in surrendering to the Lord. He just turned his back towards the spiritual master and told Vamandev that now you ask whatever you want. So Vamandev asked for those 3 steps of land, and with the first step he covered all the 3 planetary systems, all the 14 planetary systems in fact, and then with the second step he covered the heavens. And there was nothing more that Bali Maharaj had with him to give for the third step. And it was at that time that Vamandev asked Bali Maharaj that now you have given me everything. What is it that you have now to give? Nothing. So you are actually a cheat. You are not able to fulfill your words. So at that time Bali Maharaj kept his head before the Lord and told him that now you can place your head on my, your feet on my head. And that's exactly what the Lord did. So I was listening to a class given by a sannyasi, and he made 2 very nice points. The first point was that several times we come across in our preaching when we tell people about how they need to surrender to a spiritual master, how they need to surrender to Krishna, they tell us that they already have a guru. You know, right from our early age, we have been initiated by a guru, and it is in our parampara that we are following this particular person. So then at that particular point of time, the question arises whether they are really following the teachings of the guru, and who is that guru in fact? Who is really a guru? A guru is a person who connects us to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and elevates our consciousness to surrender to Him. Any person who does not do this is not to be considered as a guru. And vice versa, any person who actually encourages us to surrender to a bona fide spirit, to a bona fide parampara, and in turn to the Supreme Personality of God, such a person is to be considered to be a genuine guru. So in this case we see Sukracharya was not a bona fide guru, although he was a guru of Bali Maharaj. Because he did not encourage Bali Maharaj to be surrendering to Vishnu, on the contrary he was dissuading him. The sannyasi was making a point that Bali Maharaj actually did not have a guru. Sukracharya cannot be considered to be a bona fide guru. And the second point that he was making was that actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead could have put his head, could have put his foot on the head of Bali Maharaj in the first instance itself. But then he wanted Bali Maharaj to first surrender everything. Whatever material possessions that Bali Maharaj had, first he wanted him to surrender that. And then he took away that particular possession that was so dear to Bali Maharaj. With his third step, actually he took away that possession which was so dear to Bali Maharaj and which is so dear to all of us. The false ego. And the sannyasi was giving the comparison between Mount Everest and our false ego. Actually it may be easy for us to move Mount Everest, but actually when it comes to surrendering our false ego, that is the most difficult thing for us to do. And because the Lord wanted Bali Maharaj to actually surrender even his false ego, first he took away everything, and then when he had nothing with him, then it was very easy for him to give up his false ego also. So because Bali Maharaj was completely convinced that the only true goal of life is to please the Lord and the Vaishnavas and the spiritual master, Bali Maharaj had no hesitation. And because of this, the Lord took on the position as the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj. Complete reciprocation. As the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, ye etamam prapadyante tam satayva bhajamyaham. mama vartamano vartante manushya partha sarvasa. To the extent that we approach the Lord, to that extent He will reciprocate. So because Bali Maharaj had taken this position of being completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord took on the position as a doorkeeper, gave him a planet and made him the king, made him the emperor of that particular planet, and took on the position as a doorkeeper, a relatively insignificant position. So we understand from this pastime that when we try to please the Lord reciprocates. First of all, the Lord becomes pleased. When we try to please the Lord being a person, He exhibits this particular quality of being pleased. It's not that Lord is not sensitive to our moves towards trying to make Him pleased. Like we see in this pastime of Sanatan Goswami. When Sanatan Goswami came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after escaping from the prison, Sanatan Goswami was in a very pathetic condition materially. His clothes were torn and he was in a very dirty condition because he had traveled for several days. And the only thing that Sanatan Goswami had with him was a very beautiful blanket which was given to him by his brother-in-law. On the way, as he was coming towards Jagannath Puri, Sanatan Goswami had stopped at a village called Hajipura. And there he met his brother-in-law, Sri Kanta, who invited him to his house and told him, why don't you come and stay a few days? You are in such a miserable condition. Why don't you come and spend a few days with me? Sanatan Goswami responded saying that, I will not spend even a single moment with you. Because Sanatan Goswami knew how dangerous it was for him to be associating with a materialistic person. And Sri Kanta somehow thought that he should give a present to his brother-in-law and then gave him this beautiful blanket. Sanatan Goswami accepted it and started on his journey towards Jagannath Puri. And on the way he came to Varanasi, which was where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at that time staying. And when he came to Varanasi and met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, paid his obeisances at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately embraced him and made him feel so welcome that all the fatigue that Sanatan Goswami was feeling completely disappeared. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatan Goswami that he should now take some rest, he should bathe himself, go and take the darshan of the deities, and then after that take his prasadam. And Sanatan Goswami was offered very clean clothes by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant, and Sanatan Goswami rejected that and told him that, I don't want any clean clothes, just give me one of your torn dhotis and that is adequate for me. Just hearing this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased. He was unlimitedly happy seeing the renunciation of Sanatan Goswami. And immediately, as soon as the cloth was brought to Sanatan Goswami, he tore it and made two underwear and two outer cloth. And then, there was a Maharashtrian Brahmin over there who told Sanatan Goswami that, so far as you are in Varanasi, I would request you to come to my house and eat prasadam every day. And immediately Sanatan Goswami responded that, I am untouchable. I have no right to be coming into your house and honoring prasad from you. Thank you very much for your offer, but my constitutional position is to do madhukari. So I will accept whatever comes as the desire of the Lord and honor that. And if nothing, if I don't get anything, I'll fast. And again, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, he was so pleased. His heart was brimming with happiness when he saw how renounced Sanatan Goswami was. So these great acharyas, from their own personal example, they are teaching us how easy it is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just by doing a little bit of austerities, of course in this age of Kali Yuga, it's very difficult for us to be doing even that. But Because the Lord reciprocates with whatever we are doing and whatever we are trying, that gives us a further determination to proceed and do further austerities. Just like the case of Raghunath Das Goswami. When Raghunath Das Goswami came and met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri and completely surrendered himself, he was leading the life of a completely austere brahmachari. Very austere. He would just beg a few pieces of grains, palmfuls of grain at the Simhadwar, and if he would get it, he would eat it, and if he would not get it, then he would just fast. Or he would just chew on some fried beans. That would be his daily prasadam that he would be honoring. And when Shivanand Sen went back to Bengal, and as soon as Shivanand Sen went back, the father of Raghunath Das Goswami sent a messenger towards Shivanand Sen, asking him about Raghunath Das Goswami. So the messenger came to Shivanand Sen and asked him, "Have you come across this person in Jagannath Puri who is the son of son and nephew of Govardhan and Hiranya Majumdar?" So Shivanand said, "Yes." Shivanand Sen said, "Yes, of course we know him. In fact, Raghunath Das Goswami is actually the life and soul of all the devotees. And he leads such an austere life. He's so renounced. He just eats a few bits of grains every day. And sometimes not even that." So when the messenger went back and communicated this to the father and the uncle, the father immediately took out from... He was so unhappy. He thought, why is it that my son, in spite of having so much of wealth, why is he undergoing so much of austerities? So immediately he took out 400 gold coins and two servants and one brahmana and told them that you now go to Shivanand Sen so that you can go to Jagannath Puri and be of help to Raghunath Das Goswami. So Shivanand Sen told the messenger that you cannot go to Jagannath Puri alone. But however, I am going to Jagannath Puri next year. So next year when I go, I will take these gold coins as well as the brahmana and the servants and give them to Raghunath Das Goswami. So the next year when Shivanand Sen did go to Jagannath Puri, at that time he also took along with him this brahmana, these two servants and these 400 gold coins. And he gave these gold coins to Raghunath Das Goswami. And initially Raghunath Das Goswami would not touch it. He said, what is a renunciate expected to do with this? But then he thought in his mind that this is a good opportunity for me to serve the Lord. So every day, not every day, twice a month, he would invite the Lord to his house and serve him prasadam. And out of this 400 gold coins, for one day's prasadam, he would require approximately 640 cowries. And he would take only this much from the servant and the brahmana and use this for purchasing bhoga for the Lord. And like this he did for 2 years. And all of a sudden, one day he stopped inviting the Lord to his house. So the Lord was surprised. So 2 months like this passed, and after that the Lord one day asked Swarup Damodar Goswami, "Why is it that Raghunath Das Goswami has stopped inviting me to his house?" So then Swarup Damodar Goswami told the Lord that, "I think that Raghunath Das Goswami must be thinking in his mind that actually what I am doing is that I am inviting the Lord to accept prasadam which has been given to me by a very materialistic person. And any person who eats this prasadam will automatically become contaminated. So is it right on my part to be inviting the Lord to be giving this prasadam to him?" So as soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this from Swarup Damodar Goswami, he said, "Yes, what Raghunath Das Goswami is thinking is right. Because anything that is done by a person who is materialistic If a devotee accepts that, then there is a chance for him to be contaminated. His consciousness is likely to be polluted. So what Raghunath Das Goswami is doing is very right. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with what Raghunath Das Goswami was doing. And then Raghunath Das Goswami was, who was begging alms at the Simadwar, after a few days suddenly stopped doing that. And he would go to a booth where free prasadam would be served and just accept that and honor whatever he was getting. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this from Swarup Damodar Goswami that Raghunath Das Goswami is no longer going to the Simadwar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Swarup Damodar, why is it that he is not going to the Simadwar? So then Swarup Damodar Goswami explained that actually Raghunath Das Goswami, when he used to stand over there to beg alms from the devotees at the Simadwar, he would be thinking that this person who is now coming to me would be able to give me alms. Oh, that person will be giving me alms. This person gave me yesterday, so today also he'll give me. So this is the mentality of a prostitute. And this mentality can be very contaminating. So that's the reason why Raghunath Das Goswami has stopped going over there to the Simadwar and eats food in this free prasadam booth. And the moment Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, he was so pleased. He said, yes, this is right what Raghunath Das Goswami is doing. Because a person who has this mentality of a prostitute, his consciousness becomes so contaminated that it brings about a difficulty in his spiritual life. And then Raghunath Das Goswami, after a few days, even stopped doing that. This leftover food, leftover prasadam that has been offered to Jagannath would be thrown by the shopkeepers in a particular place which would be visited by cows. And what the cows would not even eat, the leftover prasadam, it had become so decomposed and so putrefied. Raghunath Das Goswami, in the middle of the night, he would go over there and then remove the rice, clean it, and honor that. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to know about this, he went one day straight into the house of Raghunath Das Goswami when he was about to be honoring this prasadam and grabbed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, grabbed Raghunath Das Goswami's hand and told him, what is this that you're eating? How can you eat something without first offering it to me? So Raghunath Das Goswami immediately became so embarrassed. He said, no, my dear Lord, how can you eat this? But the Lord forcibly grabbed this rice from the hands of Raghunath Das Goswami and put it into his mouth. And he told Raghunath Das Goswami that I have actually eaten the best possible prasadam that one could get in the whole universe. But Raghunath Das Goswami, let me tell you that I have never tasted anything as tasty as this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just reciprocating with the intense desire of Raghunath Das Goswami to please him. So from these two pastimes, we understand how important it is for us to just surrender to please the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once in New Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada was, Srila Prabhupada came across a devotee who expressed to him the desire that he would like to go to Mayapur and chant the whole day, as many rounds as possible. So Srila Prabhupada told him that this is not the right thing for you to do. If you do that, you will fall down. But somehow this person was so determined, he made up his mind to go to Mayapur nevertheless. In spite of the instructions from Srila Prabhupada not to do it. And people and all the other devotees were in fact telling him that Srila Prabhupada doesn't like what you're doing. Why are you going to Mayapur? He told you specifically. But this devotee would try to justify to the other devotees, saying that, no, in fact, what Srila Prabhupada told me was actually not pertaining to me. Actually, Srila Prabhupada was making a point for all of you. But this particular thing is not applicable to me. I am, you know, much higher than all these instructions. So he went to Mayapur, and then he would go under a tree, and whole day he would sit over there and chant, and maybe eat a few grains of rice every day. And he did like this for 6 months. And all of a sudden, one day, the devotees noticed in Mayapur that this Babaji was no longer to be seen. He had disappeared. So all the devotees were thinking, maybe, you know, 6 months of such intense chanting, he might have gone back to Godhead. A one-way ticket might have been given to him, and he must have gone back. And then over a period of time, they forgot about him. Till one day, when some of the devotees were going by a vehicle, they came across a gas station. And then when they went to fill petrol into the vehicle, they found that the person who was about to fill petrol into the vehicle was this same devotee. So, the devotees asked him, how come, what are you doing here? We thought that you were in Mayapur, chanting the whole day, and how come you're over here? So, this particular devotee said, yes, you're right, I did like that for 6 months, but then later on, now I got married, I got a wife to look after. So the devotees asked him, are you chanting now? So he said, what is the need? I have chanted for 6 months, the whole day. I think that is more than adequate for my whole lifetime. I don't need to chant anymore. So this devotee went into a complete state of maya. And later on, the devotees never saw him back in the association of devotees. Srila Prabhupada had that particular vision to determine as to who could really be of that particular spiritual consciousness where he could really chant the whole day. Actually, all of us are at a very neophyte level, a neophyte stage of Krishna consciousness. And for us to be chanting our 16 rounds itself becomes such a great austerity. Want to talk about sitting down in one place and chanting the whole day. Even when we try to chant 64 rounds on any particular auspicious day, it's practically impossible for us to do it because of our conditioning. But a spiritual master gives us specific instructions. Mostly, he might give us general instructions. Of course, the most important instruction that a spiritual master gives to all of us is to chant at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day, minimum, right? Follow the four regulative principles, associate with devotees. These are the minimum instructions that a spiritual master gives us. But sometimes, he gives us some specific instructions. And we have to understand that those specific instructions have been given to that person based upon his level of spiritual consciousness. Because the spiritual master is in a position to understand that he is able to perform or execute that particular instruction. That spiritual master gives him that sort of an instruction. Like it so happened once, when Srila Prabhupada invited some devotees to come to Vrindavan to construct the Krishna Balaram temple. So the devotees, when they came to Vrindavan, they were naturally very excited about the prospect of being in Vrindavan, being able to chant as many rounds as possible. Just being in Vrindavan makes such a great amount of difference to our consciousness. All of us realize that when we go on yatras. So all these devotees who came to Vrindavan were also thinking, oh, such a great opportunity for us to be making advancement in our Krishna consciousness. But the moment they came to Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada engaged them in the construction of the Krishna Balaram temple. And the person who was actually in charge of the Krishna Balaram temple was a sannyasi by the name Surabhi Maharaj. And at that time, this was in the early 1970s, we all know that India was going through a very traumatic phase. This was a time when the political crisis was at its peak, and there was such severe shortages, particularly of cement. I remember 30 years back, cement was such a rare commodity. It was practically as rare as gold. And so expensive. Because you could not get cement through the normal government channels, people would buy cement in the black market. And the prices were sometimes 3 to 4 times what one would buy it in the normal black market. And even if one was ready to pay, cement would not be available. And for these foreigners who had come from a foreign country, where everything is very, very systematic and comfortable, and everything takes place in a very normal way, for them to be experiencing this, people in Vrindavan, was something that they could not handle. They were getting cheated by these local people, and although they were promised so many things, those things would never get delivered. Yeah. Because we have to understand that in the West, at least the normal things of life, normal facilities of life are very easy to come by. At least there is no corruption or black marketing of those things which are basically required for your day-to-day sustenance. And people are used to it. That everything comes your way. You just have to pay. And the cost of living also for the basic things in the Western world is very cheap. A person could maintain himself with approximately 10 to 15% of his salary. Whereas in India, we find that just the basic household prasadam and maintenance of the house takes away 60 to 70% of your income. Right? And you hardly have any amount to be put aside. Of course, because of this, in the Western world, the extra money is diverted for sense gratification. Whereas in India, at least, we don't have that much of an opportunity to spend money for sense gratification. So, these are the basic things that are taken for granted. So, for these Westerners to be coming and dealing with these things and with the people in Vrindavan was so austere. And particularly Surabhi Maharaj was in such a great amount of anxiety because he was in charge of the project. One day he came to Srila Prabhupada and told Srila Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, it's impossible for me to deal with this Western, with the Indian people. With my Western consciousness, it's not possible. And actually I thought I was coming here to Vrindavan to be actually chanting more rounds, to be associating with the devotees, to be performing some seva in the dham, to be visiting all the holy places around. And here I'm finding that my whole day, I'm actually spending doing nothing but dealing with these people, trying to acquire more cement. Please, Srila Prabhupada, take me away from this service. And Srila Prabhupada told him, that why do you want to indulge in sense gratification? Surabhi Maharaj got a shock of his life. He said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm not indulging in any sense gratification. I'm actually chanting my rounds, but I'm following the four regulative principles. So Srila Prabhupada told him that to chant your rounds is actually sense gratification for you. Your responsibility over here is to be constructing the Krishna Balaram temple. And if there's any desire in your heart other than that, that is actually sense gratification. So, Srila Prabhupada was so heavy on Surabhi Maharaj that, and then that's how the whole Krishna Balaram temple came into being. Otherwise, how is it that it would have been possible for the devotees to be completely focused? When they realized that Srila Prabhupada was completely focused on expanding ISKCON, on fulfilling the desire of his spiritual master, all the devotees just surrendered. So also we see from the life of George Harrison. Srila Prabhupada, in all his conversations with so many people that he would come across, in fact, Srila Prabhupada, whenever he would be talking to great industrialists, he would be talking to people in very high positions in the government, he would tell them about George Harrison. He would tell them, this person, do you know this person called George Harrison? And at that time, George Harrison was not so famous in India. Of course, he was very famous all over the world, but not so famous in India. So in India, people would ask him, who is this person, George Harrison? Who is this? So Srila Prabhupada would then explain that he is actually one of the four singers in the Beatle group. And then that would ring a bell. Oh, the Beatles. Because the Beatles were world famous. George Harrison as a person may not have been so famous, but Beatles were world famous. And then Srila Prabhupada would tell those people that, see this person, George, he has given me a house in London, the value of which is about 55 to 60 lakhs of rupees. Actually, George Harrison had bought this for Srila Prabhupada for a price of 220,000 pounds, which was big money even at that time. And then Srila Prabhupada would tell the people that this person was responsible for me to print the Krishna book. He gave me 19,000 pounds to print the Krishna book when I had no money absolutely. And so on and so forth. Srila Prabhupada would just keep on praising George Harrison. And actually, George Harrison was, in our perspective, nowhere close to what we would be thinking as a great devotee. He was indulging in all sorts of materialistic activities, associating with all sorts of materialistic people. But because he pleased Srila Prabhupada, just with a small gesture, and every time also Srila Prabhupada would be telling, this George Harrison is a very good boy. I would say, our George Harrison. In the course of the conversation with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in Mayapur, one day Srila Prabhupada was telling Tamal Krishna Maharaj, our George Harrison. Such a great benediction upon George, that he really pleased Srila Prabhupada to such a great extent that Srila Prabhupada would again and again remember him. And gratefully acknowledge his contribution towards what he has done for ISKCON. Just because of that small gesture, because once when Srila Prabhupada asked George Harrison whether he could donate, George Harrison spontaneously came forward to purchase this property in London. And today, Bhaktivedanta Manor, 17 acres of such beautiful, pristine land, worth millions of pounds. If one were to evaluate what is the worth of that particular property today, it would be worth millions. In fact, it is the headquarters of our preaching movement in Europe. It's such an important part of ISKCON. All done by as an insignificant gesture, because for George Harrison, he was so wealthy that for him to be giving a few pounds was something great actually. And it was not as if Srila Prabhupada was the only person that he had come across in his spiritual life. There were so many other spiritualists also that with whom George Harrison would be associating with. But somehow, seeing the purity of Srila Prabhupada, he was completely surrendered. He actually never took initiation from Srila Prabhupada. In fact, once Srila Prabhupada made at the time of introducing George Harrison, he was saying that he is my uninitiated devotee. My uninitiated devotee. So, and I was just going through the folio to try and pick up some of the conversations that Srila Prabhupada had with George Harrison. And such intimate conversations. Every time George Harrison would be coming to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada would go out of his way to make him comfortable. Tell him, are you sitting comfortably? Would you like to sit on a chair? And he would say, no, Prabhupada, I'm quite comfortable over here. And then Prabhupada would feed him prasadam. Please take one more samosa. Please take the sandesh. Not that Srila Prabhupada had any materialistic motivation in order to be associating with George Harrison. His desire was to engage him in the service of Lord Krishna. Yad yad acharati sreshtas tat tat eve tarojana. Just by seeing how people like George Harrison behave, others also get automatically inspired. And Srila Prabhupada knew this. And from his side, George Harrison would also be reciprocating with Srila Prabhupada in the same way. The more time that Srila Prabhupada would be giving to George Harrison, actually he would be appreciating it. Once he mentioned this to Srila Prabhupada, actually, I don't understand. Why is it that you're giving me so much time? I'm so fortunate that you're actually spending so much time with me. And Srila Prabhupada told him, that is because I like you. Just by seeing his sincere heart, Srila Prabhupada was completely sold out to him. So from this particular purport, we can understand that just like Bali Maharaj, our main goal should be to try and please the spiritual master, should be to try and please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And whatever activities we do towards that, to the extent that we are fixed in our endeavor to please the spiritual master, to that extent we'll be making advancement in our spiritual life. Because if the spiritual master is not pleased, then under no circumstance will Krishna ever be pleased with whatever we are doing. We might be chanting 108 rounds every day. But if it is contrary to the instructions what is given to us by our spiritual master, we might be living in Vrindavan Dham. But if that is contrary to what our spiritual master has told us, then there is no way by which we will make advancement in our spiritual life. Sometimes devotees used to approach Srila Prabhupada and ask for specific instructions. Srila Prabhupada, please give me an instruction. What should I do? And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would give a specific instruction depending upon the level of consciousness of the devotee. But more often than not, he would just tell the devotee, just chant Hare Krishna. Just follow the four regulative principles. And of all the instructions, this is the most important for us. Chanting our 16 rounds attentively. Because by that, we will acquire humility. Sasurup Maharaj, in his book, Japa Reform book, says that by chanting attentively, we acquire humility. It makes us humble. Because we realize what is our miserable position. And what is our miserable condition? So as we are chanting attentively, as we spend more and more days chanting our rounds, actually we should come to the platform of understanding what is our miserable condition and how dependent we are on the association of devotees. Because without that, without both these aspects of our Krishna consciousness, we are actually lost. So that is the glory of what Srila Prabhupada has given us. The Bhagavatam purports. Anybody else would think that Bali Maharaj, just by sacrificing whatever material possessions he has. I remember the time once when we were in the South India Yatra recently, and all of us went to Tirupati to take darshan of Lord Balaji. And after one takes darshan, one comes towards the hundi where we deposit money. Like whatever we want to offer to the Lord, we put it in that hundi. And this particular hundi is not like the hundis that we normally have in a temple. It's a huge cloth hundi. All of you must have seen it, right? Because the offering to Lord Balaji is so large that if we were to keep a small hundi like this, then there would be a mile-long queue just to put offerings in the hundi. So they have a huge cloth hundi. And I was standing over there, just lost in my thoughts, meditating upon the darshan, the brief darshan for 1 second that we had of Lord Balaji. And all of a sudden one person comes before the hundi and he deposits some money over there in the hundi. And then he embraced it. He embraced that hundi with both his hands and then was completely lost for a few minutes in intense meditation. And then after that he dropped his embrace and started circumambulating this hundi. And I'm watching this person doing all this. And then he paid prostrated dandavats from all four directions. North, south, east and west. And all this went on for nearly about 6 to 7 minutes. And I was really wondering what this person was doing. So after he finished, I went and asked the person who was standing over there near the hundi, you know, do you see such behavior often? He said, we see this all the time. It's nothing unusual. this person who has put money over there in the hundi, actually, my speculation, but it could be quite possible that he was actually praying to get more money. Instead of actually embracing the Lord within his heart, he was embracing that hundi so that that hundi should in turn be giving him much, much more than what he has actually given. So we understand that when a person gives so much to the Lord, naturally he gives it with a material motivation. That normally this is what the case is. That when I give something to the Lord, I want something from the Lord in return. Right? And Bali Maharaj had actually given everything that he had. So one would be thinking that Bali Maharaj is such a great devotee. My God, he has given all that he possessed. And he's become completely bankrupt, so to say. What does he possess now, except the clothes that he's wearing? But then the Lord went one step further to take away from Bali Maharaj even that thing which was actually, which would actually be the a cause for continuation in the cycle of birth and death for Bali Maharaj, the false ego. So in the case of a devotee like Bali Maharaj, the Lord personally intervenes to take away everything. So depending upon to what extent we surrender, the Lord also participates equally into our lives to help us to take away whatever is not required for our Krishna consciousness. And once we come to that platform where we are like Bali Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, then the Lord gives us even more. Much more than what we have given Him, the Lord gives us. Because then the Lord knows that we can handle it. 36,000 years was what Dhruva Maharaj got in his own planet, in this material world. And then after that, eternal residence in his own planet. And that planet doesn't get destroyed at the time when the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. Such a great benediction was given to him by the Supreme Lord. So sometimes devotees wonder, why is it that the Lord gave such a great benediction to Dhruva Maharaj? Because the Lord knew that Dhruva Maharaj could handle it. Not like me. The moment some opulence is given, then all the time you start thinking about that. Because that's the material conditioning. Once the Lord removes that away from us, then the Lord reciprocates by giving us much more. And actually the hankering of a devotee is that we should be getting more and more and more of spiritual upliftment. The medicine that we require in order to elevate our consciousness. This is what we actually need from the Lord. And Bali Maharaj got that. He got the Lord at his doorstep, standing as a doorkeeper. Such an exalted position of Bali Maharaj. So, are there any questions or comments? It's already late now. It's 9 o'clock, so there are no comments. We can end. Thank you very much for your patient hearing. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.